Thanks to Adam Tickets for supporting today's Film Sack. Adam is an awesome app that gives you easier than ever access to going to the movies. And you can use the app to buy tickets, pre-order popcorn, and skip the lines at the theater. Do yourselves a favor and download the app today on your iPhone or Android phone. That's Adam, A-T-O-M, Tickets. Adam Tickets. Get it today.
There's something I've got to do, Barb. Something I couldn't do while you were here. I tried. You know I tried everything, and I still don't have their attention. Let's hope this elevates their thinking. But whatever happens, please don't think less of me.
I'm amazed you ever got past puberty. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Oh, that's quiet. Not should be. There we go. Hello, everybody. Ignore that. It's the Film Sack. Welcome back to Film Sack, everybody. The show that comes on every week. Minds of Very Depths, Film Entertainment for All Mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by this guy. Come on, scroll up. Here we go. Brian, it's pronounced Good Speed Dunaway.
Oh, thank you. Hi.
Good Speed. You
ready? All right, here we go.
All right.
Meanwhile, back at The Rock.
Can't tell me what to do. Sin pie, apple pie, peach pie. I could eat a peach pie for hours. Damn it! Focus, Good Speed. Okay. Relax. Let's do some air orchestration pointer fingers. Bigger. There it is. Sin. Oh, balls. Dropped an orb. Great. Blast some needle to the heart. Why did we give Tarantino any script input anyway? I ain't no Uma Thurman.
I'm sure.
$5 shake. No, right. $5 shake.
Oh, he's peach shake. He's still going.
I could, damn it. Focus, Good Speed.
That's all I got.
All right. I thought you were in the middle there.
I really should have practiced more.
The Tarantino part actually made the movie better. Anyway, hey, let's move on to the next guy. It's Randy Ed Harris sure looks, or sorry, it's Randy. Hey, Ed Harris sure likes to hang up on people abruptly, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Aloha,
sir. Aloha for real. You're from, you're on the island of Maui today. Yeah.
Did I ever tell you guys about the time job designing isolation booths for science labs?
No.
I guess I'm not going to tell you about it now. The greeting writes itself. I mean, the glass in all directions, the ridiculous implements that you jab into your own heart. What a great job. I miss it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good stuff. All right. Finally with us, Brian, pass out the act. I can't read anything today. Brian, pass out and activate the mini cams Ibit.
Meanwhile, taking place currently in Randy's all glass isolation booth. All right, let's get this bomb deactivated. Looks like it's a dirty bomb that was sent to a refugee camp. Let's start going through the contents. All right, we got a child's doll filled with sarin gas. Okay, we've got a stack of girly magazines, Stone Age Cave Girls in the Raw. Excellent. Let's see what else is in here.
Excellent.
DVD copy of Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. The most recent Beyonce CD, and that murder mystery book that J.K. Rowling wrote under a fake name. So, gentlemen, I'd like to issue a correction. We're dealing with four bombs instead of just one.
I wondered if you were going to do the bomb joke. That was good.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Well done,
Next
Brian.
Time, letting Ibit read my intro when I do impressions. I'll write them. Ibit narrates them.
Next time,
I started sounding like Meg Ryan, one of Meg Ryan's sultry character from Joe versus the Volcano.
Yeah.
It's tough to keep a Nicolas. It's easy. A short Nicolas Cage is not hard. A long Nicolas Cage, really
Does
hard.
Does anybody else watch The Rock soon after watching Rising Sun and forget that Nicolas Cage wasn't in Rising Sun?
Yeah, no, he's
right. Yeah,
he was. I mean, you know, Sean Connery was, but may as well have been. Sure,
Senpai was in there.
We're about to cover my favorite action film of all time. So I want to get my bias out on the table, flop it down right there on the table right now.
Like a big floppy fish.
My big floppy fish bias. Yep. And let everyone know that I'm gonna be pro this movie pretty much regardless.
You were pro coming into it.
Yeah, I was pro when I saw it in 97. I was pro.
This raises a really important question for me right here. Did you watch the movie?
Yeah, I did. Not only have I watched it this time, I've watched this movie probably 9 times total. I've got multiple copies of it. I have.
Why?
It was the second DVD I ever bought. First DVD I ever purchased was Fifth Element, and about a week later I bought The Rock.
I had to buy this UMD format for my PlayStation Portable.
Exactly. I got the UMD. No, there probably is a UMD for all I know. There,
oh my God, there's got to be a UMD.
Oh, I'm sure there's a UMD somewhere.
Probably. But
I did a mass destruction.
I liked it so much that I was sure that this meant that Michael Bay was the future of action film and that he would never make anything bad and that this was a sign of just, oh man,
you're half
can
right.
you imagine what he's going to do after this? and that didn't turn out to be true. I mean, we all enjoyed Armageddon for what it was, and there's, you know, other I like The Island and stuff, but most of his work, especially, you know, when it comes to this Transformers mess he's been in for the last 10 years, all really kind of blows goats. It's not good, and it really frustrates me because the glory days of The Rock have never quite been reached. So that's where I'm at with it. I just want that to be out front. Disagreements, please give them. That's not a problem. But I just, you know, just full disclosure, Scott's all in on The Rock.
Right. Oh, cool. Okay. So I am with you and against you all at the same time. The Transformers movies have actually made me like The Rock less. I was with you. I used to love The Rock, but after seeing all the Transformers and then seeing, I saw so much Transformers in The Rock. And then The Rock came way before, but the things that happened later.
Well, if you're talking about Michael Bay's style, well, that's one thing. And definitely that style carries over. But if you're talking about like cohesive story, well-paced scenes, connective tissue of characters and you know, forward motion and all that stuff. The right. Rock is infinitely better movie than all of those Transformers movies combined.
Well, yes. Well, you know what? I kind of like the Transformer movies. So,
well, then you're an insane person.
I'm confused. I am totally. I mean, my whole Michael Bay life has been so confused because if it hits me on the right day, I enjoy the crap out of it. If it hits me on the wrong day, I'm like, turn this loud, obnoxious crap off.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, okay. I'm going to agree with you that there is a time and a mood for Michael Bay. And if you're feeling melancholy or want to watch something like Nebraska or something, you're in the wrong theater, right? Like, don't watch a Michael Bay movie. It's a reminder of a much more sort of 90s era, loud, same soundtrack for every movie. Like, you could close your eyes and think you're watching Crimson Tide, you know.
Same video segment even sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
you can hit every note. You know it. You know every Michael Bay song by heart, and he hits every note every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you hear it in, like, you know, the modern or the Call of Duty games all sound like Michael Bay movies, and they're kind of made like them. And you know, like, that was a thing that he helped cement, that kind of early Bruckheimer deal, and it just sort of swept through the late 90s and still exists today in some form.
Mm-hmm. People who study film a lot more than we do have gotten deep into Bayhem and how he lines up a shot and how he uses the same shots in every movie and so on. And I don't think we need to get into that, except to say, boy, was I happy when I finally got a whirling camera shot right up Nick Cage's nose. Finally, on the streets of San Francisco, we're looking right up Nick Cage's nose, and the camera's swinging to the side.
Yep.
Ah, thankfully.
Yeah, yeah. No, wait. It's enough to bring a tear to your eye and make you so happy that
Christmas came early.
Yeah, it's a Christmas miracle, really. Go ahead, Brian. I like want to hear Ibbitt's take. Yeah.
Actually really enjoy this movie. I gotta say, my favorite though is Armageddon, still forever. Oh, always will be.
I feel like Armageddon.
It's way better. Like,
no, Armageddon, disagree.
It's like The Rock is like a warm up for Armageddon. Like, Michael Bay was learning stuff and then he put all of the actual good stuff into the Armageddon movie.
I disagree. I think this is too. Way more grounded. Here's the problem with Armageddon's first
Literally, in space, not grounded at all. Right.
I'm fine with the space part. It's just the first two-thirds of that movie are great, and it's got great build-up, great character stuff. All that stuff's great. Very Bay and all that. And then you get out to space, and it is a chore to get through that last third, I think. I think it's rough.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
I like the last third.
Yeah.
Jumping craters and crazy Bushini having to be strapped down.
Russian on the space station that they have to deal with. And
I wouldn't call that the last third, though. Last third I'm talking about is just when they hit the stone. I almost called it the rock, but I don't want
to. When they get onto the asteroid.
When they get onto the asteroid, they start drilling, and all it is guys yelling in spacesuits. That's where it falls apart for me. Everything leading up to that, no problem, including the Russian guy. All that stuff's great, but it's when that stuff happens.
This is actually, you could make this case for every Michael Bay film.
Oh, no,
for
sure.
They all have this same problem. He seems to be really good at describing what he wants you to be interested in. And then he seems to be really good at flashing you forward really fast through the second act where you get to a climax, and then it's just,
There's a lot of yelling, always.
The last third of The Rock, I was totally tuned out. I was just like, I haven't been given a single character to like. I want all of them to die. And I think it would actually, I actually was thinking a lot, this film would have been really freaking good if everyone would have died. Like, it would have been shocking. And
all right.
Ed Harris was the only person that I wanted to live.
Let's not paint it in too broad a strokes. The reason you're supposed to think you want Ed Harris to live is because Ed Harris was made into a sympathetic villain. He's a guy who has a real issue. He is absolutely taking the wrong tact for it. It is making him a horrible traitor and destining him for death as he ends up getting in the movie. All of that stuff is true, but he is painted as somewhat sympathetic. In the end, he doesn't want to kill 80,000 innocent people. He wanted to have a show of force that got people to do what he wanted them to do, and when he didn't do it, he was ready to back down, so you had to leave it to Candyman over there to push everybody over the edge.
He doesn't want to kill a million people.
He
just wants to kill a few dozen. And every time he does, I'm like, this is a really bad person. There's no redeeming him.
No, I'm not saying he's a good person. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that he is seeing those things as, there's a word for it. Not acceptable. What's it called?
Collateral damage.
Not collateral damage. It's another word. I forget.
Acceptable damage?
But it's you weigh the risks for what you're trying
to do. Civilian loss acceptance policy?
No, because he doesn't. But hold on, back up. He doesn't kill any civilians. It's all army dudes. That's it.
Who we know aren't people.
I think this is a really important point, and I don't want to get off of it too quick because there's a bunch of stuff in the trivia about this specific thing and how Ed Harris worked supposedly really hard with Michael Bay. Sounds like a weird thing to say, but they worked hard to make his character more sympathetic. So that by the end of it, his own men turning on him, taking him out, he does not want to kill 80,000 people in the Bay Area. He wants to stop it here. Enough people have died. Enough blood has been shed. Now, all of that being said, I never quite understood how the loss of the secret Chinese missions worth of elite soldiers' deaths and then them being ignored and not acknowledged by the U.S. government, I never understood how those lives were any better than those of the guy at the guard station when they went to go get the sarin gas, the four or five other guys that they shot as they were heading in there.
Nor does the film want you to care about that.
Right.
The film comes up with this flimsy explanation for why he's doing what he's doing, and it really doesn't want you to think about it. It wants you to think about the science around the poison and the rock itself and the prisoner who's been in prison forever for no reason and is getting now suddenly to be free and so on. Like, all of these other things are supposed to be the entertaining part. You don't worry your pretty little head about why Ed Harris is doing what Ed Harris is doing.
I don't understand why
not just give him a real reason. They could have just come up with anything. Like, off the top of my head, he could have actually seen something that was, you know, a real tragedy. You know what I'm saying? Like, or he could have information about, I don't know, that they're gonna do something horrible to the earth or to, you know what I mean? Like, just anything.
Deforestation. It's going to be, yeah. I'm so angry. I'm going to kind of agree with Scott on the part that I think Ed Harris was a very sympathetic character. I felt like the story was strong enough to really kind of root for him. Cause you could tell he felt conflicted.
Oh, the whole time. Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
But when we say sympathetic, I don't want that to be the literal use of the word sympathetic. It's important to match the word sympathetic and villain together. He's still a villain. He's still doing the wrong thing. This is still absolutely wrong, and it all blows up in his face.
But you can see yourself being pushed far enough that you would do something that's stupid,
yeah,
right?
But you also could see a guy who's been there long enough and who has been a hero in all these different wars and has this part of him that's like, well, I'm not killing 80 million or 80,000 civilians. I'm just not going to do it. And then Candyman is just, yes, you are. And where's my money? And then it all goes to shit from there.
We're in it to win it.
And that to me is enough to say, yes, sympathetic villain. But it doesn't mean we're all going, oh, poor Ed Harris's character. Yeah, I sure hope General Hummel gets his shit together. Like, it's not like that. Anyway, that's your movie. Now let's talk about it. It sparked and only increased my interest in Alcatraz as a thing I think is rad. Mm-hmm. I couldn't wait to go. And when I did finally go a year later than this, by the way, we went the very next year. They didn't have a little fat dude taking us on tour. It was, everybody had a Walkman.
Was there a guy that looked like Phil Hartman that said, I'll be your guide. My name is Vicky.
No, I wanted it to.
Was everything wet all inside? And was there mysteriously a working operating like smelting plant or something? Where
that furnace was
huge like sci-fi gears from the ship from Galaxy Quest are going on? Like, was that going on?
No, that was not going on. They didn't let me go. If assuming that part exists, I was never allowed to go down there.
Hold on. I just referred to something from the movie The Rock. And you said, assuming that exists.
All right, hold on now. Okay, the one part that was that I will cop to that you just asked is that it was very wet. We went out on a very rainy, wet, humid, awful kind of day. Mm-hmm. It rained the entire time on the ferry. We got out there.
Perfect, though, right?
No, it was awesome. That was awesome. Yeah. I loved every second of it. We were cold. We were all kind of bundled up. And we walked through that place, and everything felt damp. So, everything I thought I was going to get, I got. Except for a fat little tour guide. We got the Walkman.
Do they let you? I assume they let you go into a cell, but they probably don't close it behind you. Right?
Yeah, they never do that. Because there's no guy to do it. You're just walking around on your own.
It's a self-guided tour.
Yeah, okay. You have headphones.
So when you said there wasn't a little fat dude, I was expecting it was a little skinny dude. But no. Not even a dude.
No dudes. No ladies, no dudes. All you had is a headset and a Walkman type thing and a tape in there and a guy going, this portion of the prison was used for blah, blah, blah. And then you could pause and then you could sit. You could sit on one of the toilets in one of the rooms in there and go, oh, this is cool. And then walk out. Like, it was just a big free for all.
You didn't.
Oh, I totally did. Of course I did.
You sit on the, oh my, did you burn those pants?
No, it's like no one's crapped on that thing for hundreds of years or however long it's been. 100
so you
years.
think butt crabs just die after a certain amount of time?
Yeah,
is that what
that's
you?
Actually, they actually do.
Is that what you, okay.
They actually do
maybe.
Die.
So, maybe.
I'm really enjoying the thought that Scott Johnson probably spent more time at Alcatraz than the majority of the people who made this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because this movie for all of its name and all of its claims, it really doesn't do much with Alcatraz itself. Like, they could have been in any old busted up prison. You know, there's lots of helicopter shots of the island, but it's not like they really.
They filmed it in there, though. Like, there's there's this thing, which was famous at the time, and I found it again. Sean Connery had this deal where he would not do the movie unless the producers built this small, like, cabin on Alcatraz, like, out there in the courtyard.
I'm going to need a cabin.
Because he didn't want to travel. He didn't want to travel from the mainland every day. So he got what he asked for, and they did it for him. So the whole thing is filmed there. Now, you could say, well, sure, they could have maybe recreated that on a soundstage. But I always liked that it was, you know, these were the actual halls. These were the actual prison shots. This is stuff outside.
I mean, it's so close to this. It's got to be pretty close to the studios, right? I mean, it wasn't that much of a trick to get out there.
To get out there? Oh, I'm sure it was no big deal. But it's Sean Connery, dude. He gets to call the shots. He's a venerable old man with Hollywood cred. So
Yeah, let's give him the credit that he didn't want to take a 20-minute boat ride every day. Oh, the horrors. It would have been so horrible for him to stay at the Hyatt there in Fisherman's Wharf.
He said, listen, walk
down to a boat.
He said,
in the morning,
listen, if you're going to make me show you the prom queen line, you're going to make me a cabin out there on Alcatraz.
You ever lose your boat keys?
Yeah, you ever lose your boat keys?
That piece of trivia actually makes me hate Sean Connery. Like, what a douchebag.
He's not the first one, though, right? Like, all these guys have writers like that.
I feel like we keep watching films where I'm not getting to appreciate Sean Connery, and I would like for us to watch. Can we watch Medicine Man? No, wait. What?
Oh, that's a great one. Mosquito I love Coast? Medicine Man.
Oh, Medicine Man. You're thinking of Harrison Ford. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Medicine
Man. Young Indiana Jones. You're thinking of young Dr. Jones.
Okay. I'd like to watch a movie where Sean Connery does some great dramatic acting, because, like, we keep seeing these Highlander type films, and his job is to look cool. And he does it.
He absolutely awesome in this. Are you kidding me? He's a badass in this. In every scene he's in.
Yeah.
We're going to have to watch Finding Forrester, dog.
Exactly. Like, his acting. It's just.
I love it. I'm not going to complain about it. I love it. In fact, he should have kept the long hair the whole time. He should have been this crusty old fart the whole time.
He's been a ponytail.
Him in the Zardoz
ponytail. Bring it.
Him in the hotel throwing Leo McGarry over the side of the thing with a rope is awesome. By the way, let me just give a quick shout out to some casting here. Something I love about this movie. So this movie has, if you didn't notice, the following people: Candyman, Tuco, Dr. Cox from Scrubs, guy from Minority Report that used to help Tom Cruise get his wooden balls out.
Let's get your wooden bombs out.
And Hicks. And then the guy that was in Raising Arizona with Nick Cage, hanging around with John Goodman, playing Paxton. There's an amazing array of, like, character actors and dudes that you either know from other things since or whatever, and I loved every second of that.
And let's make it clear, dudes, my God.
Oh yeah, very dude heavy.
Like, oh yeah.
They had they must have had a sign up that said no women allowed for this film. It was
unless you're hot Claire Forlano, whatever her name is, that's from
Mall. Even there, they say, you know, even in the movie, we don't need you in San Francisco. You go ahead and stay home.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
The equivalent of the casting couch or the casting
situation.
Yeah.
We'll hire someone else to be Connery's daughter and have the one scene in the park in Golden Gate Park, and that's that.
Yeah.
The women were just few and far between. And my gosh, someone please agree with me that if you had been Nick Cage's girlfriend, you would have left him. Please.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. She's pregnant, so I guess
he's laying there laying there making sweet love to a guitar, and you come along with this huge news and he's a total ass. Like, oh my gosh.
He's sitting there naked with his guitar too after his hard day at work, after the doll went crazy.
Well, okay. We're jumping right into what I thought would be the thing that would gross Scott Johnson out.
Oh, go for it. What is it?
Let's do it.
And it is Nicolas Cage. Right, exactly. We don't want to touch that guitar. We don't want to sit in that chair when he's done.
No, he
peels off. He has to peel off that leather.
The sound of Nicolas Cage getting out of that chair.
I'll give you that. That's pretty freaking gross. No question about it. But it's not the thing that grossed me out the most. Well, as the show goes on, keep that in the back of your head. Try to figure out what it was, because there was something in this. Oh. That has grossed me out since.
I thought for sure it was going to be that.
For me, it was day one. It's bugged me since I saw it in 97. All right. So keep thinking. It's
you
later in the movie. There's the hint. It's later in the movie. That's the only hint I'll give you. That was pretty early in the movie, so it's kind of cheap.
Okay.
Anyway, I love that. I just love the casting. Of course, David Morris, Ed Harris, two of my favorite actors freaking ever. I don't think David Morris was given enough material. However, I just could watch that guy just sit there and look at things. I just love him. To death. I love Ed Harris. Those two being your chief bad guys, old soldiers from Vietnam all the way up till now. Just perfect casting for me. That's part of why I think I like it a lot, is those two guys. And I know that sounds weird because you don't spend that much time with them, but man, those guys are great.
Well, I think you like it because you saw it a long time ago and then you saw it over and over. Like, I promise you, having seen Armageddon several times and now seeing The Rock for the first time, I can tell you, you would have different feelings. Boo. If you had done it in a different order.
Boo! I've seen Armageddon just about as many times, and I like Armageddon, but it is no The Rock, and I guarantee
it is no The Rock.
Guarantee we are gonna, and people listen to me very closely at home. Get up on the blog, you leave your comments. I guarantee more of you think The Rock is a better movie than Armageddon. I will
ooh,
bet money.
I'll take
on
that
this.
Bet.
All yeah, right.
I'll take that bet too.
I'd like to hear from someone who actually saw Armageddon first, because it's just so much more developed. You can tell a lot more work went into that film in preparation. There's times in The Rock where I'm just like, wow, they really didn't think about this. They just put some actors out in a hallway and had them go running down there and threw some stuff off the walls, and then they slide in the muck.
Well, it doesn't require a spaceship and an asteroid, if that's the difference. You know what I'm saying?
And an animal cracker.
I would like to see Nicolas Cage in that latrine with an animal cracker.
All right, so just for funsies here, I've looked up both films on Rotten Tomatoes, where old reviews are all kind of coagulated into each other. The Rock has a, I still think, slightly undeserved 66%. It should be higher than that. And Armageddon enjoyed the maxing out of 39%. I think our audience will land in about the same place. I'll bet you cash. Not cash. I'll bet
39% of Rotten Tomatoes for Armageddon.
Yeah.
Scott backpills out of that. Not cash. Did I say cash? I meant
something other than cash. I don't know what. Space points. Everyone gets space points if I lose. But I'll bet you that's how the audience splits on that. I would be shocked if it didn't. But anyway.
I'm gonna disagree. I think our audience, I think the people who listen to this podcast are gonna lean more towards the Armageddon types.
I think so too. But I would have said, I would have expected Rotten Tomatoes to have those numbers flop. Well, not flip-flopped. I don't think The Rock deserves anything as low as 39%. But
right.
I'd say I would expect both of them to be in the 70 to 80 range with, 60 to 70 range with Armageddon just a little bit higher.
A lot of backpedaling in this episode.
A little bit, yeah. 80 range. Okay, yeah, never mind.
So here's
what I just
some.
Say? What did I just say?
You know how
I couldn't say that with a straight face.
No kidding. Every movie I feel like we see, there's a piece of trivia that says Arnold Schwarzenegger was almost involved somehow. So I'm going to read you this week's.
Okay.
Arnold Schwarzenegger was offered the Mason role. That's the Sean Connery role. But at the time, the script was only 80 pages, quote, with a lot of handwriting and scribbles, and it didn't seem fully baked, he said in a Reddit AMA. He stated his regrets not taking the role. Years later, however, he still got to play the part of a convict with a mysterious past in Escape Plan in 2013.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a step.
Yeah.
That's like I realized Schwarzenegger was already quite successful, and he wasn't going to ever hurt for money or fame the rest of his life.
Yeah.
But I'm having a hard time thinking of another one where someone turned down more money and prominence for nothing. I mean, that's nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if if your job is acting and somebody gives you a script that doesn't feel fully baked, you're probably going to be hesitant to take it, even if you're, even if it is more money, right?
Plus, if you're diddling the nanny.
also in 96, we hadn't quite, right? In 96, we hadn't quite gotten the impression of Bruckheimer, Simpson, and Bay that we did like a year or two later, right?
Well, this was feel like this was the start, although I'd say Crimson Tide was technically the beginning of this.
Yeah, that's earlier.
Yeah, that was like 93 or something. But it felt like
I feel like the next year with Twister, we finally, and I realize Michael Bay didn't direct that, but I feel like the next year with Twister, we finally, everybody goes, oh, Bruckheimer brings the excitement.
Yeah.
And then the following year with Armageddon, it was this huge Bay explosion of, a summer.
Yeah.
And I just feel like maybe with The Rock, we weren't quite there yet. We didn't, like, people like Schwarzenegger wouldn't sign on the dotted line without a little more to go on.
Right.
Right. That makes sense.
Plus,
he didn't ask for a cabin. Nope.
There was another one in here I think is fake, where it says he was also considered, Schwarzenegger that is, for Nicolas Cage's role in Face Off, and it would have paired him with Sylvester Stallone. Now, I just want you guys for just a second to imagine Face Off.
Ridiculous.
With Schwarzenegger and Stallone. I don't buy that one. That sounds like complete
really
bunk to me.
I don't buy it, but man, I'd like to see it.
My
Yeah.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
So So the thing you need in Face Off is an actor who can act like the other guy wearing his own face.
Can you imagine
I'm trying to imagine Stallone doing Arnie's voice and Arnie doing Stallone's voice. And damn,
yeah,
we got
back.
It wouldn't even work. It wouldn't work. There's a reason it never happened, because it wouldn't have freaking worked.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino.
I like your proposition, Randy.
So Quentin Tarantino is an uncredited scriptwriter on this film, as he was for, there was something else he did. Oh, no. That's what this was. Okay, so Quentin Tarantino helped write the script along with Jonathan Hensley and Aaron Sorkin, of all people, did this script together. Now, in Armageddon, it was J.J. Abrams who had that weird scriptwriting job, if you guys recall. Right. I think that's super interesting in early Michael Bay stuff. You had people that would go on to be much more important and sort of seismic to film than Michael Bay ever will as scriptwriters.
Now, was Tarantino part of, was he part of the character writing, or was he part of the story writing, or does it really say?
It just says uncredited screenwriter of the film, so who knows what that means.
Because immediately when I saw the needle to the heart thing, I was like, man, that is like Tarantino's
Pulp Fiction.
Right.
It's very Tarantino, sure.
And so I was curious if it was story, if it was character, or what part. I guess they don't really say, do they?
No, but there are times where like I get a vibe from him from that, like him, them in the lab, the fake lab. Oh my gosh, that lab was so freaking fake. But anyway, the fake lab where they're trying to get the doll diffused and all that stuff Brian was riffing on earlier in his intro. That dialogue felt Tarantino to me. The then I've got to stick this needle in my heart in the middle of all this chaos part feels very Tarantino.
Very Tarantino, yeah.
There were lots of those things kind of later, too.
Escalated scenes. He does really good with that. So.
Yeah. The part in the shower where, you know, Hicks is starting to call everybody out and telling the general he agrees with him, but he, you know, we all swore an oath and all that. It's very Tarantino build up and something's going to go bad here in a second kind of thing. So
now we've named lots of people who had their fingers on this movie at some point, and I have to ask a question. Because I want someone to blame for one of the worst things in the movie. And I don't want to blame Nick Cage for regularly ending like this.
Yeah.
When he's talking. Right. And then he goes back
to talking.
But isn't
that Nicolas Cage?
That's totally Nicolas Cage.
That's a Nicolas Cage thing,
I think he improvised some of that stuff. Who knows? I mean,
he's done that in so many things that aren't Michael Bay that, you know, he just does that. That's his way of thinking that he's interjecting some pathos and some excitement into the scene.
Yeah.
Can we at least blame the director for not telling him to knock it off?
I bet you $1 million that Michael Bay said, could we maybe do one without the yelling the last part of that line?
I mean, but sometimes
you're not gonna like it.
But sometimes it works. Here's a part where it works.
What do you say we cut the chit chat? A-hole.
I like that hole. A-hole.
It's entertaining. Okay.
Zeus's butthole.
Zeus's butthole.
Yeah, that one. That's a good one. Zeus's butthole.
I'm just saying, you could see why the film wasn't nominated for any acting Oscars.
Hell yeah, of course not. I mean, and you know, a lot of these guys weren't quite, you know, like Ed Harris, though having a storied career so far and doing quite well, he hadn't hit that phase of like, I'm going to make that cool movie about that tortured artist, and I'm going to make these other things that give me all these nominations. And, you know, we look at him now. Yeah, we look at him now and go, oh, Ed Harris, man, that guy, he's like an American action treasure.
I was watching this trying to decide if I would, if hanging out with Ed Harris in real life, having a beer would be interesting or maybe excruciating.
I'm going to go excruciating because you just.
Do you think he's like, you know, because you see him in some of his walking around Hollywood pictures walking around Hollywood, but his shots where he's not in a film, and he's got his little page boy hat and his glasses.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think in a conversation with him, I don't think you could ever steer it away from the direction that he would want to take. I feel like every conversation would be wherever he'd want to take it.
I think this is mostly our imaginations, but I get that feeling too. Like he seems like he might try to dominate lunch a little bit compared to somebody else. Like of all the people in this movie that I would want to hang with, I'll bet the nicest guy in the entire group is Candyman.
Probably so.
Like the one who's always a douche is probably one of those guys in real life where you could just hang and talk and chill.
I would just bring up Candyman.
Yeah, don't say it three times.
Five times, yeah.
Or whatever it is.
I think if I would like to hang out with Nicolas Cage and just kind of sit around and make Chris Pratt faces, because I think it would just be fun and entertaining just to sit there and watch that idiot.
So I'm glad you brought this up, because this allows me to talk about my favorite person in the movie, both as an actor and his performance, and the person I would like to spend time with in real life. And that is the actor who played the president.
Oh, yeah. That guy's great.
Right.
He also played the president in Armageddon. Yeah. So these two movies take place in the same universe, yeah. which I absolutely love.
Yeah, I love it. And he got to, in both cases, got to do a speech and a, a montage speech. Yep.
Yes.
And his favorite song is apparently Leaving on a Jet Plane.
Yes. And I just want to spend some time with that.
Con Air?
They did. They did. It was an Allman Brothers song or something they sang in Con Air. Freebird?
Oh, was
or
it?
Leonard Skinner?
Was it Freebird?
Because they made the joke. They made the joke about we're in a plane singing a song sung by people who died in a plane crash. I guess that was a Buscemi line, so I shouldn't have done it.
Didn't mean to Ed Harris you there, Randy. Go ahead and finish.
No, I love this. I wish the president had a speech in Con Air.
Yeah, that would have been good. No, that guy's great. I'm a big fan of presidential inspirational speeches in the middle of your movie. Even in ID4, it's my favorite thing, and I hate that movie. So that'll tell you how much I like that.
What'd you think about the retired president speech in the new one? Did you see that one?
Which one? New one? What new one?
The new Independence Day.
Oh, and I didn't see
latest
it yet.
One.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
What?
He did one of. Dude, that movie is by all accounts a heaping pile of steaming dog garbage.
Absolutely, but it was. I enjoyed myself still.
All right.
Do we just
want to wait for it to stream on Netflix and we'll film sack it, or do we want to see it before?
No, we want to wait.
We can wait.
We should wait.
It's a good
So
ride.
Speaking of shared universes, though, Randy, here's the fun thing.
Yes.
I looked at this. There's a conspiracy, not a conspiracy, but there's a theory rolling around that Sean Connery's character is in fact an older version of his James Bond character. And was incarcerated by the U.S. government after being caught at the border trying to smuggle out those plans that they talk about in this movie, and that the Mason name is just a pseudonym and not actually his name, that this is literally James Bond, the super agent who used to work at his queen's, what do they use?
On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Yes.
Yes.
And if only they had said something like that, just a little bit more in the script. Oh my God! I would have loved this film so much.
They
more.
Did in the 3-hour version. God, kill me!
Wait, there's a 3-hour version? What?
No, geez, Bay. Every time it's
they are long.
When you go into a Bay movie, it's going to be there's going to be about 3 acts more than you want to watch.
Of the three Bay movies, wait, we've seen 4, right? Armageddon, this, Bad Boys, and The Island. I think are the 4 we've seen as film suckers, I mean.
Okay, sure. Let's go with that.
Here's the list of best to worst for me. The Rock, number 1, and by a pretty big margin, Armageddon, The Island, and then way down there, Bad Boys 2. That's how it goes
about
for me.
The same spot. Switch the top 2.
Yeah, you don't like the top 2 so much. It's just the reason I even say that, I don't even like ranking movies usually, but I think it matters for Michael Bay discussions because he's so wildly... I mean, there's nothing about me watching this again that gets me going, oh, maybe I'll like the new Transformers movie. Maybe I'll want to go see this one, even though I skipped the last 2 because they disappointed me so much the first 3 or however many there have been. 2, 3? How many? There are 4, right?
You know, the Transformers movies are those movies that I'm like, I know what I'm getting, and I don't go to the theater to see them, but I do still watch them. I just wait for them to come to Redbox or something, and then I just sit down and... I can't say they're life changing, but I think it's a fair trade for my time. Usually,
You like Marky Mark in these new ones? You okay with
that? Oh yeah. I like. He's entertaining. It's entertaining. It's not necessarily art.
He thinks he found a transformer.
It's entertaining.
I was waiting for that.
I wondered if you were waiting for that. Yes, go ahead.
I want to get my list out there because I want to hear from somebody on Twitter for whom this is the precise order. So it's The Island is the best of the 4, and then Armageddon, and then I don't really care about Rock or Bad Boys 2 being 3rd and 4th. They both suck. But
they might as well 3-4 together.
So that's fine. But what's so important is to recognize Michael Bay, the cinematographer, and The Island is where he shines. It's just amazing. I've many times called The Island a coffee table book of a movie, and I still would love to have an actual coffee table book of the best shots in that
from
film.
The Island. A thing that I just so you know, and I don't want to disappoint anybody, never, ever going to be a thing anyone publishes. Right? But I do want to say this. I want to say this real quick. You're going to find out on Twitter.
It's going to come out from really random house.
Yeah, really random house. Extremely random house is going to put that out next year. So you're going to get the kind of feedback you are going to get is that you're insane because The Rock is, I guarantee The Rock is everyone's favorite Michael Bay movie. Like, I'm just waiting for this. We got to get this episode freaking out and in the wild so we can hear back. And it's not just so I can go, ha, told you so. I am telling you, that is where the near 20-year consensus is.
Scott, do you know how sampling works? Okay, there's four of us. Three of us think that Armageddon's better. I'm going to say that just...
But no, that's a small sample, and that's not fair at all to Scott.
Right.
Because, and it's important to keep drilling this point back. Everyone saw The Rock first, the critics included. They saw The Rock first. If you are 20 years old right now and you are watching The Rock and you previously saw other Michael Bay films, you might not have the same reaction.
I don't know. I saw episode 4 first and I liked episode 5 better. So I don't know how that works. Empire Strikes Back is a better movie than A New Hope. And so I like Empire Strikes Back, and I like...
It's a sequel. Of course it is.
Well, sure, but if the... that's a good point. But I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know that it matters. Maybe it does, but I don't know that it does. Like, I'm not 100% convinced about that argument. I think if you see something of somebody's first, they just happen to be the director. I think most people see these movies, I don't care who the director is. Like, we care, because we're paying attention to this stuff. But if I went and asked, my aunt.
I didn't care at the time.
Yeah, if I asked my aunt, who's Michael Bay? I don't know. Have you seen Armageddon? Oh, I enjoyed that. What'd you think of The Island? It was okay. What'd you think of The Rock? Oh, I love The Rock. The Rock is so good. It's got Sean Connery in it.
My mom came to visit me in September, August or September, whenever the Olympics was happening.
Yeah.
And I showed her Force Awakens. And we're talking about episode 7. And she's seen maybe 2 of the previous 6.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating. It was just fascinating to experience it right next to her on the couch. Mm. And she just really, like, vaguely remembers that Darth Vader was a thing. And, you know, it was
fascinating. I love the idea of Randy just staring at his mom the whole time.
It was so interesting because who are you making the movie for? And we always assume if we're the fan of something, the movie was made for us. And that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, that's true. Sure. You know? That's true.
My mom went with me to see Ultraman. She was not a fan.
No, didn't like that, huh?
Yeah. Didn't care for it. I also sat there and went, fascinating.
There was a chick in the bucket and a trope at the same time. So I'm going to play these.
Oh, yeah.
Right there at the same time. you had the DC naive young 32-year-old secretary of the whatever he was, chief of staff guy from the White House.
Dude who didn't know about the
And everyone piles Chinese on him, like all the military guys are like, "You're an idiot, you're stupid, what are you doing here?" "Well, I'm the chief of staff of the White House," whatever. And he's like, "Well, you're an idiot," and blah, blah, blah. That guy's always in these movies, and he always gets crap for it, and then he disappears. He had nothing to do at the end of this movie. There was no reconciliation. He didn't do anything to help anybody. It was just, what was he doing there other than to say, only military guys know what's going on, bureaucratic guys shut the F up.
That's definitely the Bay in this movie. He's trying to elevate the military people into, I don't know, just stone cold and hard. Wow.
Well, and it's so full of war porn. Every time there were loving shots of military jets for no reason, I would like stand and salute the screen.
Backed
with electric guitar,
Oh, dude.
Like, couldn't you just Top Gun or something?
Couldn't you just hear, like, Ted Nugent on that guitar? Like, I felt Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
I swear, that and during the chase scene, it felt so damn 90s to me because of the electric guitar you hear during the chase scene. You don't hear that anymore, and you never heard it before that. But during that time, it was a total electric guitar fest.
Here's the soundtrack or a piece of it, and this is the stuff that's just part of the soundtrack, but it is so every Bay movie... Every Tony Scott movie, like that whole crew and the way they made movies, they all use this soundtrack, I swear. Here it is. And I think they went on to keep using it in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Right.
And just kept using it.
I was going to say,
Oh, that's so funny. And it's the same. I think it's the same composer, honestly.
It's a montage of them attaching guns to the side of the tank or, or, you know, greasing up their guns or raising the mainsails on their pirate ship or whatever. Yeah,
preparing the missiles to shoot at the Russian sub. Like exactly. Just whatever.
I feel like that Hans Zimmer orchestration really came into its own with the Russian sub movie.
With Sean Connery.
Hunt for Red October.
Yeah.
Hunt for Red October. Roll Tide.
Yeah.
I feel like that's where it really happens. And so now you watch this or you listen to the score from Armageddon and it sounds like a Russian submarine. Like Johnny Depp is stepping off of a boat in the Caribbean and it sounds like a Russian submarine. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good. I like that stuff. I like it in a very winky kind of way because I don't think it's actually very good now. But at the time, it got your blood pumping. It got you going. Video games have completely lifted that from that era, those movies, and they use them all the time, even today. And I swear, if you could pin down those guys at I forget the name of their new company, but they used to, the former Call of Duty guys, they do the Titanfall games now. I forget their name. Oh, Respawn Entertainment. I'll bet if you pin those guys down and go, all right, quick, name your top three inspirations. And they'd probably just name three Michael Bay action movies from the 1990s. Because it feels like those games are
They would say Hans Zimmer, Curse of the Black Pearl. That was Hans Zimmer. Hans Zimmer.
And Hans Zimmer sure has gotten more. I mean, he's definitely evolved. Like there was a time where every one of his soundtracks were identical like that. Yeah. And then suddenly things like Inception or a bunch of other movies where there's clearly a switch. The Batman soundtracks are also that way. Where
they come in eras.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No, his I don't know what his era is right now, but his last era I really liked.
We're in the post-Inception era. He doesn't sound like that like he did in Dark Knight anymore.
He's still spinning a top and nobody knows if he stops.
I haven't seen Rogue One yet, so I don't wanna talk about the movie itself.
So good.
But I do want somebody
go on Slack.
God.
Yeah, stay off Slack. We have a spoiler group in there that is on fire at the moment. But anyway,
there's an acquaintance of ours named James Bartholomew who went on Facebook this morning and called Rogue One the worst live action Star Wars film ever.
Really? He's an insane person.
I love James too. That's
he ranked it below Episode Two, and I'm just like, okay, all right. So
he's wrong.
I get curious.
Yeah. I need to stay far away from social media for a couple days.
No, you need to do that, but also just know I don't think the movie's that divisive, but there is a small percentage of people for whatever reason it's not hitting the mark for them, and I don't know why. Right. I hit the mark for me and then some. Freaking love
it. I bring it up because I need someone to tell me that Michael Giacchino knocks the music out of the park.
It's really good. It's really good. It's really, really good. Okay. It's so reminiscent of Star Wars, but also has a bunch of new twists. I loved it. I loved everything about it. So people go, it's awesome. Don't let anyone tell you not to see it.
Right. And if you don't enjoy it, you don't enjoy it. But if you haven't seen it, don't go see it because you've heard people don't enjoy it.
Yeah. And then listen to Hotline Monday on Monday because Justin apparently didn't like it and I loved it. So we're going to have a war that night. So
Go ahead. I was going to say, I haven't seen it yet, but I already know one of the pitfalls of this movie is just from the marketing is it's going to be a lot slower ride than you're probably used to.
Disagreed.
Okay.
It's
so
a much faster
so you're saying
ride.
It's not.
No,
okay.
It's nonstop fun action. Awesome. Star Wars. This isn't this sit around in a room and talk.
Is it because you can't pin? Is it because of the, I don't want to know. Don't tell me.
You just need to see it. Like there's nothing to hear to say why people don't like it. I can't explain why they don't. I think they're insane and losing it and they don't know what fun is anymore. So go see it.
Okay.
You don't even know what fun is.
Yeah.
Let me string this back around just a tiny bit. Do you think my mom would get it? Having only seen The Force Awakens, basically.
If that's all she's got as a reference point, and if she liked that, then yes. But if she didn't like that, then probably not, because it's a Star Wars movie, and there's weird shit
It's a nicely self-contained story that doesn't require you know anything else about this universe.
The more you know, the better, because I think it actually adds to it. But Brian's right. It's not like you have to have that. It is very self-contained. Right. But it depends on if she liked that last thing or likes anything about Star Wars, then yeah, she'd like it, I think. But if she hated what she saw and just doesn't like the idea of weird aliens and droids and the things that make Star Wars.
If you don't like droids.
I clearly didn't make my point earlier. If you haven't really seen much Star Wars and you're an older person, but you like action movies and science movies, oh my God, she loved The Force Awakens.
Oh, like, well, all right. She'll like this. Really?
Yeah, Force Awakens. Oh, for sure.
And I think it's because it kind of just borrows all the best parts of all the previous movies, you know? Yeah. So like she was getting like the greatest hits of Star Wars.
Well, what I liked about this one is it's definitely all the referential stuff you want as a fan. There's plenty of fan service and all of that, but it also gets to breathe in its own space and come up with some new stuff I've not seen in a long time. So whereas Star Wars episode 7 felt like it felt like coming back to something I knew, and I liked it for that. This felt like seeing a bunch of things I haven't seen before mixed with things I knew, and that's what the original Star Wars felt like for me. So in a lot of ways, this filled a hole that 7 was never going to fill, because that wasn't 7's purpose. 7's purpose was to continue the Skywalker tale and to
what
move
is
in,
your purpose, 7?
Is to move into
why
the
are
new
you here?
To move into new three new movies and all that. That they have a goal and they have to do what they have to do. But this got to be this thing that not only can stand on its own, but got to play with areas of the universe that you don't get to normally. There's no Jedi in this damn thing. Like, not to spoil anything. I think that's all.
That's
well known,
no spoiler.
But,
I mean, we've talked about that. They've made. I've the marketing has been really good about that. They've really said, "Look, you can get no Jedi in this. Now there'll be some sword play, but you're not getting any Jedi." Don't spoilers.
There's no spoiler, but he's not a Jedi. That was the whole point of it. He's not one. You may have missed that dialogue, but he was like a. Okay. He's like a. You know what he's like? I got it. You know what a squib is in the Harry Potter universe?
Yeah,
he's like a squib. He's a squib. He's got parentage and upbringing that is Jedi, but couldn't quite get over the line. Couldn't pass the exam.
Right. Okay. I totally.
Yeah. Which I love, by the way. I freaking love that.
You brought up Harry Potter. I just want to say one thing. You don't get to really choose when you make a movie and you put it out what other people, what the viewers have been experiencing leading up to it.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of movies they win or they suffer from the fact that for instance, with Rogue One, the audience is coming in having just seen Arrival and having just seen Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them and earlier this year, Civil War and so on. And I think it's important to always keep the frame in mind when you're talking about something relatively new. It's nice when we talk about The Rock because we don't have to do that. It doesn't matter what was playing in theaters in those 6 months leading up to it.
Yeah.
It doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
Not that we even care.
Well, there you have it. What else? There's some cool stuff.
Hey,
what?
Yeah, I was going to say, I wanted to talk just real quick about greatest chase scenes in out there. This is one of my generation's one of the best chase scenes ever. And I went back and seen a lot of other films as well, all the way back to Bullet. And, you know, chase scenes always intrigued me, but this was the first big...
Chinatown had some good ones.
Right, Chinatown, exactly.
Yeah. French Connection, that kind of stuff.
Chase scene?
I really like.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, you need a Trump alert for it because it's a classic chase scene.
Sure. If I have that clip here. Here it is. There you go.
It's got, It's got Take the Wheel. It's got San Francisco is a trope, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the hills.
Yeah. Yep.
Take the steal a car from a real snotty guy at the valet.
It's a fancy car you know is going to get completely destroyed.
Right. It better not have a scratch on it.
Actually,
there's
like two of them. Two of them happened because the one guy got his Humvee taken. They have taken my Humvee, that guy. then you had sports car guy, and both of them got completely mucked up. So that was that.
What about the train operator?
Oh yeah,
love that guy.
You got to mess up some local transit where they're all in peril, and then the guy who runs it's pissed at the end and yells at the sky.
Giant explosive cable car.
Yeah, dude.
all the bay notes,
cable
man.
Car full of propane.
Yeah, I mean it is the Bay Area, so why not get it all in there?
Oh,
get it.
All right, to answer, your question, Dunaway.
Yeah.
Yes, bring it back.
Heat with Robert De Niro and
holy shit, that movie's so good.
Val Kilmer and
that chase scene. I'm gonna jump.
John Reno driving. Yeah,
dude. There's no listen. John Reno, by the way, he was in Ronin as well. That guy can just be in every movie with a good chase scene.
Yeah,
he's so good. Oh my gosh.
I will actually. I'm gonna change my mind. The final chase scene in The Transporter, the first Transporter.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh,
amazing. Dude.
Yeah, really good. Really good modern and example.
I might change my answer too, because I was going to say something else, but
as shaky cam as they are, I think some of the green grass stuff with the Bourne movies have some pretty good chases in them.
I think I might be thinking of Ronin. Is that the one with De Niro?
De Niro's in it.
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
Yes. I guess he's in both of the Heat, but Jean Reno wasn't in Heat. I'm definitely thinking of Ronin.
He wasn't in Heat?
I don't think you.
And why was he rubbing up against my leg?
Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah.
No, I love a good car chase, and you're always going to get them in Michael Bay movies for sure. Yes, Randy.
A couple more tropes I want to insert there. One is the so-called television geography trope, where from one moment to the next, you're in a completely different part of San Francisco. Love that. This chase scene, in that edit, this chase scene just happened for 30 minutes while they went from one place to another, and they're still chasing.
Yeah. A lot of times it's the same road over and over sometimes. I mean, which makes sense. They can only close off so much, right? Like, that's a big bustling city. Right. I don't know how they let anyone film there in the first place, but whatever.
And then the final trope of every chase scene in every action film was really on display with us, where we just all walk away from the chase. The chase is over. We're fine. We're just going to go on about our lives.
Right.
Move on with our lives.
That geography thing, though, where I see it, where it really bothers me is any time a movie takes place in Las Vegas and they're supposed to be going down the strip. And I know the order of the casinos that you should be seeing.
They're
at the Stratosphere. Now they're at Mandalay Bay. Now they're at Monte Carlo. What?
Yeah. So when they were coming down in the plane in Con Air, which is kind of a chase scene, how coherent was that?
It was incoherent.
It was totally off. Yeah. And we talked about this when we did that. He swings by one that should have been back further or crashes into another.
That stripper does not know.
Yeah, she doesn't work there.
Hooker, sure.
She's not there.
She works the street. She's three blocks over. When we watched that American Ninja movie or whatever it was called that was filmed here in Salt Lake, had the same problem. It's just it's a problem with, like, when you're a doctor and watching ER, you're a computer scientist watching Face Off, or you're, you know, any of these things, you just notice that stuff just jumps out at you. And so Vegas for Brian must be torture every time it's in a movie.
Oh, dude. Mm-hmm. And I just want to commiserate with Brian Ebbett. Rest in peace, Star Trek The Experience, because back in the day, Star Trek The Experience would end with you flying into Vegas in a shuttlecraft. And it was correct. They did not take any liberties.
It was correct, but they used that thing for several years after many of those casinos were destroyed or replaced or rebuilt. Yeah. So you're flying, you're like, oh yeah, I'm in the Las Vegas. Oh, wait, why are they showing?
Why is the Stardust
Palace like that?
And the Aladdin? What is that? That's hilarious.
It was just so. I remember going on Star Trek The Experience right before it closed in 2008, and you were there, and Jonathan Colton was there, and Len Peralta was there.
Oh yeah.
And it was long in the tooth, but man, they didn't take any liberties. It was right down the strip.
Yeah, yeah.
It was wonderful.
Frank Sinatra standing out there in the corner waving.
They needed George Lucas to go back and do some retouching. And all right, we're going to add this casino, and we're going to let's put Hayden Christensen over here at the Bellagio.
Oh, Lord. The reason that's hard for me to hear is, A, you do a really good impression of his voice, but also, B, he would totally try to do something like that. You know what's nice about one final Rogue One comment? If there are people out there who love the prequels, and I have good news for them, because this movie takes from all of the other source material, canon material of Star Wars, and pulls it in, including prequel stuff. Like, there are some very specific nods to prequel people, and they matter. Like, they're a big deal. Specifically one particular guy who I won't mention because I don't want to spoil it, but there is a very much a prequel connection that you may not expect.
But you're scaring me again for someone who hasn't seen those movies or doesn't. You know, like,
you haven't seen the required prequels.
No, I'm just saying.
His mom.
On behalf of someone.
Oh yeah, no, it's fine. She won't even notice. She'll go, I remember him from L.A. Law. She'll say. I think I just gave it away.
Wow.
I may have just.
Yeah,
given it away.
You just impersonated my mom. And by the way, to do that, do your best Peggy Hill from King of the Hill. That's my mom. That is my mom.
Oh, I can't do Peggy Hill, but I know what you mean. I can do Hank.
Ha, Hank.
Ooh, I can do that. Only when he's freaked out. Bobby! When he's mad at Bobby or something. He's going, ooh.
Oh, Bobby.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's my Bobby. Boy.
Damn it. All right, we're going to take a brief break, and we'll come back in a second with clips. Guys, I want to thank Atom Tickets for supporting FilmSack this week. That's ATOM Tickets. It's a free app on your Android or iOS device, and you can go get it for free. It's a super easy way to go to the movies. You can buy tickets, watch trailers, even pre-order your popcorn. Crazy. Plus, with Atom, you can scan your QR code at the theater so you don't have to wait in line. And if you plan a movie with friends, you can invite them right from the app so you can sit together without footing the bill. Once you have it, you won't know how you lived without it. Download the Atom Tickets app today. That's ATOM Tickets from the App Store or Google Play. Try it out and get $5 off your first order with the code FilmSack. Just download the app. It's ATOM Tickets. And use the code FilmSack. Do it today. You won't be sad. Anyway, let's move on to... I think we should do some clips for this film. This film had a lot of clips. I went kind of nuts with it, so we're going to tear through these. Cool. I've already played two of them, in fact, is how many I have. So here's... Vinyl hipsters existed even back then.
First of all, it's because I'm a Beatlemaniac. And second, these sound better.
It irritated me, but whatever. Yeah. It's fine. And then maybe they do sound better. I don't know, but I'm tired of people talking about it. Okay?
Yeah.
All right.
We like your records, too. It's fine. Bunch of hipster, dirty hipster, millennial, weird pants wearing hipsters. All right, next up, here's Brian's favorite line. Here you go.
Let's see, we have some dirty magazines. Stone Age cave girls in the raw. Kinky.
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 Kinky. What? Oh, him on the guitar.
Blowing up the office.
When he's naked in the chair.
Yeah. Clearly doesn't care about the strings on that guitar because he's going to break one.
Yep. This guy made me laugh.
What kind of f- tour is this?
That guy made me laugh.
Oh, yeah.
He was great.
Wow, ham it up a little.
Yeah, he was pissed. He was stuck in, I mean, you know, okay, so we're one of the gross things at the prison. And here's the other hint of the thing that grossed me out the most. It was at the prison. But one of the things that grosses me out is 15 people in a cell that was made for one person in Alcatraz being in there for multiple days at a time, and someone's got to take a dump. If not everyone.
And well, they have the things in there. They have a toilet in there.
No, that'll work out great. Everybody else, just ignore that.
Turn, yeah, go face the right, face the bars. Hey,
sure. That is one of my worst hated things ever.
That's nothing.
I had a toilet in my jail cell. I was in there for 9 hours, and I never went to the bathroom once.
Yeah.
Wait, you was in a jail cell?
I was in jail for about 9 hours for failing to show up to a court on a speeding ticket or on a impeding traffic ticket.
When was this? How many years ago was this?
This was back in 1980.
Yeah, you were a kid.
89. Yeah, I was a kid.
You're like 17, 18 or something.
I was, exactly. So, I was like, oh, I'm not going to show up, but, you know, it was bad.
I'm not going to court. That's stupid.
Exactly. Oh, I'm not going to send my money in on this ticket. I'll just wait and go to court. And then I forgot to go to court.
So, but here's what happens. If I was put into a jail cell, I would pucker up and not have to poo for about a month. Like I would suddenly just like, okay, I don't have to go anymore ever. I didn't know that story about you. Have we not heard that story?
That's crazy. I could have sworn I've told it somewhere, but
you might have. Maybe I don't remember it. But
yeah,
I also went to jail when I was 16, 15, 15.
What?
When I was 15, I snuck out of the house in the middle of the night to go see my girlfriend, and we were picked up in a baseball park.
Wieners out.
No.
Okay. Nice. Wieners out.
All right.
Just check it. So film sack.
It would hopefully just be one wiener.
We were just sitting on some bleachers talking at one.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
The policeman who came over and told us he had to take us home, took her home and then took me to jail.
Oh, wow. Okay. Teach the boy the lesson. Sure.
I wasn't put in a cell, though. I was put in an office where I had to wait for my parents to be roused and my dad to come pick me up, which was the worst part of it all.
Oh, I bet he was thrilled, probably thrilled about this.
Did he beat you all the way home, like in that Will Smith song? No.
That was the official teach him a lesson office.
Yeah.
The Bernie Mac version would be beat you till the white meat show.
Yeah.
So the policeman who put me in this office said, I try to never put youngsters in a cell if I can help it, because I don't want to give you a story to tell other kids.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting.
But you're an exception. Come on.
Yeah, no, that's a good, actually, that's a really wise thing, I think, because kids are going to get out, I was in jail for 8 months or for 2 days or whatever. Like, it seems like you're way cooler than you are, and it actually becomes a badge of honor. I totally get that. That's cool.
I did not realize that Film Sack was 50% cons.
I know, dude. I've never spent a second in any sort of juvenile or adult detention either. Of any sort. No. That I know
well,
of.
Well, it's because you're good and you
there's a new
div- keep
there's
that
a
up.
New dividing line here at Film
when
Sack.
I was 22 I'm going to admit something to you guys that hopefully doesn't get me in trouble, but when I was 22 I got a jury notice in the mail and forgot about it completely forgot. Oh, so in technically I think I was in contradiction to the law by not showing up or doing something,
and they will call you. I got mine.
Well,
today.
I never did. No one ever called me. Nothing ever happened. So either we're just horribly inefficient here with the our county court system or something. But I never heard anything again. I never went in, and I forgot. And it was years later. I was like 28, and I went, "Oh shit!" My wife's like, "What?" I missed jury duty, and she thought I meant like then. But I was like, "No, it was like years ago."
Scott's laying down just to go to sleep. Oh, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. Oh God, 5 years ago, I forgot to go to jury duty.
That's kind of what happened. It was a sudden realization. So
anyway. The only reason they didn't take Scott to jail is because they know there ain't no jail can hold Scott.
Oh, you can't put me in the corner with the toilet.
Actually, Scott Johnson's such a common name. I'm sure some dude suffered for that.
Yeah, somebody. Yeah, you know what? You're probably not wrong. I'm not kidding about that. You're probably right. And that maybe I got lucky. For once, my common name saved me. All right, here's Ed Harris, and I love him, and he talks, and I love him, and he talks. So here you go.
We have achieved our position through poise, precision, and audacity. To this, we must now add resolve.
Yeah, dude. Ooh.
You know, Alsh and I say I've achieved my position.
Yeah.
Never.
Well, now you don't have to add resolve then yet. You're fine.
No, I don't. Unless I spill some spaghetti sauce on my...
I tried to record this every time he did it. I may have missed one or two because there were so many, but he did this a lot.
This is Brigadier General Francis X. Hummel, United States Marine Corps from Alcatraz. Out.
Hanging up on people constantly. Any communication there was, General Hummel from Alcatraz, out. And he would just slam the phone down. And I got him as many times as I could. So we'll hear more of those as we go. Here's an 11-second one about all the things.
Three tours in Vietnam, Panama, Grenada, Desert Storm, three Purple Hearts, two Silver Stars, and the Congressional Medal of Jesus. This man is a hero.
Congressional
Medal of Jesus? Yeah. I want that. How do you achieve that?
And maybe it's just the fact that we're in the Christmas season, but I really was expecting somebody to go, and a partridge in a pear tree.
What do you think about that, Jim?
I think that was implied.
Maybe. Yeah. It just sure came off that way, though. I heard it, too, when I heard it.
Can we have the Trump alert for the Congressional Medal of Honor?
Always.
Boy, they'll just give that thing out to anybody. Like Forrest Gump, and he just gives it to some strange, or gives it to some girl. And like, it just, in movies, the Congressional Medal of Honor is pretty much the starting point for being a lead.
It's like the peanut. It's like peanuts at a Cubs game. They're just everywhere, those things.
Right.
here are, what? Oh, another out.
Hummel from Alcatraz, out.
All right, there's number two.
Out.
Out.
Ryan Seacrest, out.
Out. I hate this part. Oh, I hate this part is what I wrote.
This isn't happening.
I hated that because that's when he was doing it. And I remember being in the theater and they're out there on the roof doing it. And I remember bugging me then because, let me do it again.
This isn't happening.
My wife would have been pissed if I ever did something like that. Right. It's like, no, you don't get to be mad and combine it. I mean, kids, if you're listening to the podcast, turn away for a second. You don't get to be mad and combine your anger with your two thrusty thrusts there, buddy.
Especially fully clothed.
Yeah.
And she had put on pigtails, so, you know, he must have a thing for that.
Yeah, he thought it was naughty.
That's what I'm guessing.
It was naughty, he said. So anyway, it doesn't happen.
Kid, you can take the towel off the radio now and come on back in the room.
All right, so here's Hicks. We know him from... many movies. I really like Michael Bean. Bean.
Michael Bean.
He's in. We've seen him in Terminator on this show, of course. I don't know why we haven't seen Aliens here. Have we? Have we seen Aliens? We haven't seen Aliens. We need to see Aliens.
My goodness, we would love to see Aliens.
I would too. I want to watch it just for the hell of it. So let's make an excuse and do it for the show. That'd be great. But anyway, he's great. He's also Rico on Tombstone, and here he is.
If we're compromised and shots are fired, Hummel might launch. Our only alternative is an attack from within the prison. We penetrate the island through the tunnels under the prison buildings undetected and emerge in its center. That way we can jump the Marines from behind, and if we're lucky, take the rocket positions without a shot fired.
There you go. Only way to be safe is nuke it from orbit. Nuke it from orbit.
What? I was pretty sure he was going to make that the Ibit prom date, but plans.
Oh,
but
I got more of those. Don't worry.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. Oh, I'm prepared. I got I got Ibit stuff.
Great.
Here's a good line.
Under there is a maze of shit.
There you go. I like that one.
Oh, did we find the spot, you're by gross? The way, that's gross Scott out the most? Because I think the maze of shit was pretty much.
You're getting close. Really. You're getting close.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely think. I'm pretty sure it was the bathroom back in Central.
Nope, you're still getting close.
Are you sure? Yeah. That was just Nat. Who?
Brian.
When they're having to climb in through the sewer grate to check out the little motion detector thing. Oh, that was
okay.
Yeah, that was
you fun. Nailed it. That was it. That was my place.
Oh, oh, really?
Yeah, I can't stand the idea that thousands upon thousands of inmates were showering and washing all manner of guck off themselves into those vents or into those drains. And the drain is the place you have to come up through into the shower. Yeah. It's that disgusted me. That's so gross.
Yet you sit on the toilet.
Well, in pants. In pants. It was fine.
Did you, Scott? Did
you still have those pants?
No.
Right?
No. It was 97 or 98. They're gone.
What kind of pants were they? Were they leather pants?
No, 97. They were
dungarees.
They were jeans.
Dungarees, maybe.
Dungarees. It was the 50s. I was wearing my dungarees.
Are they slacks? Action wear.
Exactly. Pantaloons. All right.
It was a pair of sweatpants, wasn't it? It was a pair of Adidas sweatpants. I know it was.
I swear it wasn't.
No. It was Hagar Sam's a belt.
There you go. No. Oh, Hagar's man. I had some Hagar's.
It's my favorite character on Game of Thrones.
Oh, it's like Hagar Hans Sansabelt. He was so good.
Hagar Sansabelt.
What was his banner? Was like a 100% cotton salt size
medium. It was.
That's right.
It was a belt.
No iron. It was a picture of an iron with a slash through it. That's his sigil.
That's amazing. All right. I'm glad we took it there. Here is the library police guy from Seinfeld.
He does not exist.
He does exist. We just chose to forget him for 30 years.
Yeah, you think you come into the library and don't have a card. Say, that guy. He's great. I like that guy a lot. I forgot to mention he was in it. All right, here's and something about how old he is.
I have to get up 3 times a night to take a piss.
What's the deal? I'm taking a piss 3 times a night. All right, here's tired and angry Sean Connery. Everyone's favorite version of Sean Connery. Tired and angry.
In charge of what? F*** me over for another 3 decades.
Decades.
Wow. When he went for that two-way mirror, that scene was pretty freaking awesome.
That's a great whole sequence is awesome.
Yeah,
love it. All right, Ibit.
Really?
Wants,
what? Yeah. I thought that was ridiculous. I don't understand why it was in the movie. Oh, because let's send in the science nerd who doesn't even know why he's here.
No, not what? That.
Right.
Not that.
Well, that's
I'm
a trope,
talking about
though, right?
That's all tropey and stuff. But what I'm talking about is the quarter. Smash it once with your chair. It's got a hard edge now. Run up to the window, cut a hole in it, bust
pokes
through.
His head through.
And he goes, like, Womack, I should have known it was you. Oh, it's so good, dude. Come on.
You can't hide from me.
And I'm sure we've even seen, breakout like scenes where somebody's like a master at lock picking and stuff like that, where they've used far less to get into far worse.
Oh yeah.
And right.
Quarter to unscrew things. I believe it.
Pretty great.
Yeah.
But pretty great.
When he stole the quarter and smashed it under the chair, I had no idea what he was doing.
Yeah.
All I was thinking was, what are all these professionals observing him doing right now? Because the film's making them out to be stupid as hell.
Well,
they're not noticing what he's doing.
But they weren't in there. There was nobody in the room at the time. He's in there alone. He's got...
They all had their backs turned.
They all had their backs turned in the room with the mirror. And then, so he did all that while they weren't looking. Now, how he would know they weren't looking, I don't know. So I'll give you that. But I don't know that it was that implausible. There wasn't like there were guards sitting there watching him smashing and pick it up.
I just like the idea that he could so easily pull back the curtain. Because that's what he basically did, Mm-hmm. He pulled back the curtain and looked at the wizards and said, suck it.
Yeah.
it was just fun.
I should have known it was you, Womack.
And technically, Brian, he would have said, shuck it.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah. Shuck it, boys. Shuck it. Here's Ibit. Okay. Ibit only wants this stuff on his prom night. This is his writer for his prom night. Okay. He has a list.
My prom night writer finally surfaced.
Yeah, here it is. Yeah. I'm going to read it to you. It's in the voice of, I don't know who says it. Here you go.
I want a sweet shower, shave,
and the feel of a shoot.
There you go. That's it. That's all you want for prom night.
A shower, a shave, a shoot.
A feel of a
shoot. What's a
don't forget about the other S.
How does a shoot feel? Like a parachute?
A pair of shoots.
That's right.
Parachute.
But, all of a sudden, this is a Dr. Seuss poem. I want a shower, a shit, a shave, and a shoot.
I wish he would have said a shit. He didn't say a shit, but I love he should have.
He needs to, though. It's absolutely, that's in my repertoire.
It would fit perfectly, yeah.
Okay, here's how you know it was the mid-90s.
Am I out of style?
Unless you're a 20-year-old guitarist from Seattle. It's a grunge thing.
Grunge.
Grunge. Sweary Sean Connery.
Why am I not surprised, you piece of shit?
Yeah, dude. Because it's okay, so that, it's Womack.
That, what, the script said piece of sit, right? And then that's how he says it?
Now I want to hear it that way. Hold on.
Why am I not surprised, you piece of shit?
That'd be great if it was piece of sit for anyone else. That's really good. All right. I love how he sang out of key and timing on the song while he was in the shower trying to decide what to do. So here it is.
If you're going to San Francisco, don't forget to wear flowers in your hair. If you're going to San Francisco.
I love it.
You know why that is?
Because they filmed at different timing, right?
Exactly, right. Music wasn't playing when they filmed it. Yeah. And they just said, do you know the words? No, but if you put them on the inside of the shower, I could sing them.
I like how you took put an extra SH on the shower somehow. That was good.
San Francisco?
Yes. Put flowers in your hair. All right, here's, what's this? Oh. Oh, the stylist guy.
You the barber? No, stylist.
Stylist? It's 97. Yeah. We can still make fun of gay people out in the open.
That's the guy who was on Boston Common on NBC during Must See TV.
Oh, yep, wait. Yep. Oh, yeah.
Comedian dude.
That's why he's familiar.
Comedian dude.
Well, he has a trouble saying the word scissors. Here's him doing that.
No scissors. You've got to be kidding me. No scissors. I mean, did they tell Picasso no brush?
Brush.
Because he's trying to.
And
it's not scissors, it's shizzers.
Shizzers.
Trope alert, we meet him again in the elevator. And
yeah, we did.
And that's the uncomfortable or awkward elevator moment.
Yeah.
When someone gets on and someone else is already there and the person who's already there has to say something, apparently.
Yep. Don't hurt me. I don't know why you did that. You never met me, but I just want to make sure you liked your haircut. It's a pretty bad joke, but. Whatever, it works in the moment for me. Here's some chit chat about a-holes.
What do you say we cut the chit chat a-hole?
There you go. There's that. Sean Connery dad joke.
You're between the rock and a hard case.
Hard case. This dude is intense, is what I wrote.
An incursion underwater to retake an impregnable fortress held by an elite team of U.S. Marines in possession of 81 hostages and 15 guided rockets armed with VX poison gas.
Damn. That guy.
Did I just summarize that really well for you guys? I'm the summary.
I'm
just
not
to sum up.
You think I'm going to live, but I'm not. It's going to be sadder because I'm young and bright-faced. So
I'd like to have a comic book hero, the Summerer.
The Summerer?
Just go around and sum everything up.
Oh, I like that. The summary, he would be called.
Summary.
Yeah. The adventures, the mad adventures of the summary. All right. Here's Ibbitt's mom to his prom date. Okay. So this is your mom saying this to your date before the night.
You breathe, he breathes with you. You piss, he helps.
There you go.
All right. Yeah.
I didn't see that going.
That was also on my writer.
You piss, he helps.
Opportunity missed.
All right, I hate when movies do this, I wrote.
This man knows our most intimate secrets from the last half century. The alien landing at Roswell, the truth about the JFK assassination.
I don't do that to me in your movies, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't give me other movie ideas in your movie. Like, don't suddenly confirm all these conspiracy theories and then make me think about them while I'm supposed to be, you know, focused on the fight.
Well, this is one of the reasons I hate this movie. Like, this exact spot is where I went, oh no, it's not in my universe. Yeah. It's in its own stupid place where Roswell, you know.
Yeah. You and I are together on this part. I don't like this part. But Armageddon, for the record, and The Island are full of moments like that too. Like The Island.
Because they specifically asked in Armageddon, he wants to know. That's one of his compromises to being an astronaut. He wants his taxes wiped out and he wants to know.
What's
who
in
shot
Area
JFK?
52?
Yeah.
Oh no. Who
shot JFK? I don't remember. It's a Michael Bay thing, maybe.
Yeah, maybe Michael Bay was like a big conspiracy theorist and he voted for Trump.
Tinfoil hat, that'd be
that'd be awesome. Maybe he needs to do like a JFK movie like Oliver Stone, but even weirder.
There you go.
And that last chase scene, I lost my tinfoil hat. Let's go back.
Let's go back. I need it.
Michael Bay is going to make a Hillary Rodham Clinton movie. This will be great.
Yeah. I wrote that line here, so let's see what that is.
Your vest. Losers always whine about their vest. Winners go home and the prom queen.
Yeah,
I like that one. Now, see, I was a little too spot on for Ibbot's thing, right?
That's what I was. Yeah, that's what I was. Was wondering how he was going to work that one in.
It's your best, Connery, is what I wrote for this.
Your best.
Your best.
Best.
All right. My name is. Oh, this guy. I felt bad for him in '97. Not so much now. He made me laugh, but here he is.
My name is Larry Henderson.
And I feel kidnapped.
What does he even say?
He says, my name is Larry Henderson. He was the one hostage they let talk to the government and when they were threatening to kill a hostage, which they never did. All the hostages
Larry
lived.
Larry Henderson? Usually, I have a Bigfoot in my house.
They broke one of the trope rules, though. Normally, you have at least one dead hostage, almost always, in these movies. And no hostage ever died.
Right. All the tropes are based around that you're doing dealings with the hostages, and this movie doesn't deal with them at all. It just puts them
aside. If we killed a hostage, though, we would definitely wouldn't pull for Ed Harris. So probably
it's a bit like what am I thinking of? Oh, Air Force One, when they do that a lot. They kill a lot of hostages to make a point or whatever, and then you know it's one of the things you do every hour until you meet our demands. We will kill one hostage. General
Terrorist
Hummel
makes a point.
Yeah. All right, here is your best Connery. I already wrote that. I already did that one. Okay, how about this one?
How, in the name of Zeus's butthole, did you get out of your cell?
So that's a great thing, and this will forever be in my soundboard.
Zeus's butthole!
I'm going to keep that forever.
I just want a shirt that says Zeus's butthole on it. Just
big,
bold font.
Yeah, big, bold font with a big asterisk
in
the middle.
I love the movie conceit that a person under greatest stress imaginable, with thousands of lives hanging in the balance, is about to say asshole, but tones it down one notch.
Yeah. Well, that was his character, right? Yeah. That was his character because he kept saying frickin', and he would refuse to swear until the end, and it was just part of his good speed thing. So I think that was on purpose, obviously. I mean, I think it was obvious it was on purpose, but... Yeah, I mean, if I'm in, you put me in a situation like he's in, I'm not sure I'm having the conversation to begin with. I think I'm just laying there in a puddle of my own goo going, we're not going to get out of here, are we? Like, I'm not going to sit there and act like I've been smoking pot all night going, what's it like to do the best? Like, he's having this philosophical chat with Sean Connery. It's stupid. All right, one final thing. This is the President of the United States inspiring us all for 34 seconds. Take it in.
These past few hours have been the longest, darkest of my life. How does one weigh human life? 1 million civilians against 81 hostages. And in the middle, Frank Hummel. That we have ignored, abandoned, or marginalized a great soldier like Frank Hummel, and that American boys have paid for that neglect in blood, is equally real.
Oh, it's got that music the whole time. Oh, it's so good.
Okay, wait. So what did you just switch over to?
Says later music that's in the movie when they're just running around. It's not part of the same.
I thought maybe you had switched over to like Pirates of the Caribbean.
No, but it sounds like it, right?
Yeah, it totally
does.
No, it's from this movie. It was some scene where they were all gearing up to do something. Anyway, there's your clips, everybody. Hope you enjoyed those. Oh, look here. Right here, I have the Film Sack checklist on a card that was just handed to me. Best Bay movie, check. Shut up, Randy. Next one, spilled the same blood in the same mud, check. I like that line when he yelled that in the shower. We spilled the same blood in the same mud. And I thought, you're not rhyming at a time like this, but all right, fine. We'll let it go. Finally, Candyman. Candyman bit it in a better way than the dude with the ball in his mouth, check.
Mm-hmm.
I hated that guy. The guy with the ball in his mouth. He's awful. All right. Well, let's get to the Star Trek stuff. There's some connections. Willie Garson.
Was he the Rocket Man?
He was the Rocket Man. Willie Garson was Francis Reynolds, and Voyager played Riga in the episode 30 Days. Tony Todd, he played Captain Darrow here. He's Candyman. He played Worf's brother Kern in four episodes. He was also Sisko when he's old. Or no, Jake Sisko when he's old on Deep Space Nine was also played by Tony Todd, although that's not written here. Tom Towles was Alcatraz Park Ranger guy in DS9.
Tom Towles.
In DS9. Towelies, it's literally spelled like towels. Well, it says T-O-W-L-E-S, so. Oh, I guess it would be true. E-L-S, wouldn't it be?
Towelies.
Yeah, Towelies or Talus. Anyway, played stuff in Voyager and DS9. Michael Rose was an FBI agent, was in DS9. And Anthony Garrida played lead F-18 pilot, the one that shot the missile the last second, almost killed everybody. In DS9, he played a Cardassian in the episode The Circle. Lots of connections. Soundtrack grade, I'm giving it an NAS for 90s action shit. Because that's what it was.
In AF.
NAF?
What was, yeah.
What's the F?
Yeah. 90s
action. What's the F?
wait, I don't get it. 90s action, what?
F? 90s action sound as F.
Oh, as F. Got it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. N-
you can take your towel back off, kid.
NAAS. All right, I like your head.
Terry Towels or whatever his name was.
I like your head that. All right, let's get to the Twitter post where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's begin with the Hawaii trapped Randy.
The Rock. Never have I ever just wanted everyone to fail and die. Except the hostages? Okay, sure. But honestly, I'm fine if they die too.
Oh man, that is a brutal summation of one of the finest action films ever made. Brian Dunaway.
The Rock, like ordering a McRib with no onions. I cannot give that order. I am not going to repeat that order. I will not give that order. I am yelling.
How did I not? By the way, I have that angry acting. Oh, you know what? I missed it. Here, I missed that one. Let me play that.
All right.
Here you go.
But that doesn't give you the right to mutiny.
You call it what you want. You're down there. We're up here. You walked into the wrong goddamn room, Commander! Goddamn it, Commander, one last time. You tell your men to safety their weapons, drop them on the deck.
I cannot give that order!
I am not going to repeat that order!
I will not give that order!
What the hell is wrong with you, man?
Stand fast!
Oh, my God.
That's so great.
Just when you think they're done. Yeah. It's loud down there by the forge and the smelting machines.
Can I get that order? Can I have a moment before Brian Ebbett goes? I have to ask a question.
Yeah, sure.
What are the McRib onions made of?
Mm. Oh.
Because they are delicious.
Wait,
and
which Brian?
Vital.
Which Brian are you asking?
I don't care.
Dunaway, the only McRib eater.
McRib onions are so wonderful, and I don't believe they're made of onions.
They're onions with that barbecue sauce on them.
Mm. Yeah. Those onions are just plain out hate. That's what they are, but they're delicious.
Delicious hate.
Sometime when you get a McRib and it has extra onions, isolate a few slivers and like try to put them in something else like a salsa and you'll understand what I'm talking about. I don't get it.
They're not, they don't seem like onions. I don't think you could like piece them back together and you know, reveal a full onion. I don't think that would happen.
Yeah.
I don't know what they are.
I think it's just the fact that they're crispy and they've got that barbecue sauce on them.
Yeah.
Well, so happy McRib season, everybody.
There it is.
Can't wait for my shamrock shake.
You should eat in poke anyway.
Yeah, you should be.
Well, it's Hawaii. There's a McDonald's on every corner.
Oh.
Where did I end up?
Doesn't mean you have to go there.
Did I get to... did I do
Brian's
Dunaway?
Twitter post.
Oh, yeah, Brian Ibbets. It's Ibbets. I couldn't remember if we did Dunaway yet. All right, Brian Ibbets, what's yours there?
The Rock. Actual line from the movie. There's a possible penetration point in the shower room.
Mm. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I was so glad you didn't clip that one out because I would have had to scramble for a new Twitter post.
Somehow that flew right past me. I don't know how I didn't get that one. So I'm glad you did. I'm glad you picked it up. Well, knowing that. Ooh, look, but alternate titles right here. We got The Green Jello Show Tastes Funny. What? This Green Jello sure tastes funny is what I meant.
Oh, but you like how you did Show Tastes Funny.
Show Tastes Funny. And then... and then the other is how gross were those showers. All right, let's get to an email. We got a quick one here from someone who's calling himself the Pope the Ninth. It's a strange name. Sure. The Pope the Ninth. He says
it is the Pope.
How come you guys don't do an old Star Wars movie? Get on it, you slackers, says Pope the Ninth.
All right.
Look
here, Pope. I'm tearing your picture up right now.
We've thought about it. You're like a bald singer from the 80s.
That's me.
We've thought about it, right? But we don't know where to start. And
yeah, and streaming, none of them are streaming, right? I mean, it's,
I don't think so, but they're Star Wars. No, they're not. So they're Star Wars though, right? Like,
but they're Disney, like Netflix should be bringing.
But what I mean by that, it's not like people don't have a way to watch it, because Star Wars is everywhere and everyone owns it. So it's not like streaming should hold us back. I'm kind of with this guy. Maybe we should just pick one. Do we start with the prequels and move up? Do we start with four? Do we only ever do one and never any others? Like, I don't know.
Return of the Jedi would touch
the prequels.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, you know, that's probably the best plan, because there's been so many things done about the originals. I think that the sequels are probably...
And even sacking Return of the Jedi just feels derivative at this point. Like, mm-hmm. I just don't have any... I can't imagine coming up with something new.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we start with Phantom Menace and then decide after that if we care to do the other two at all, because... I mean, Phantom Menace is just so bad.
Would we consider a live commentary?
Oh, that might work. That's a fine idea there, Brian Ebbett.
Episode one, yeah.
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah. We could laugh good time there.
One of the things I always point out is those movies are long. It would take...
Longer than The Rock?
Yeah, it'd be a 2.5 hour.
Well, for a live sack, he's saying. Yeah, he means like a commentary track. Oh, man,
so if you were in it for a long movie and we're going to do commentary... I guess I kind of want to do a movie that people would want to watch and listen to. Like, I don't want to ask people to watch Phantom Menace to listen to us talk, you know?
Yeah, well, I don't mind if it's a bad movie and it's short, I'm cool with those. And if they're long movies and good, but lots of, you know, moments for us to talk and laugh, I'm cool with those. Mm-hmm. I think it's bad. I'm kind of with Randy on that if it's a long one and it sucks. But I don't know, maybe Star Wars has it's in its own category. I don't know. We'll have we'll discuss this offline and we'll figure it out. I can tell people at home that we're going to do Ernest Saves Christmas next week.
Yes!
Our final
God, I was worried he wouldn't save Christmas this year.
Seriously, though, after, like, it's been 30 years. I was a kid and Ernest was on my local news channel doing comedy that had been pre-recorded where they inserted local town names and stuff. Like, I have never seen an Ernest movie. I'm so excited to watch this movie.
Oh, what? You've never seen an Ernest movie?
Yeah, you got to see all the Ernest movies.
I hadn't either.
The only good one is, I mean, I'm just going to say this out loud and let this wash over you, but the only good one is Ernest Goes to Camp. Everything else is shit. So
I'm gonna let this wash really over you. Good one? Suck it.
I realize that is a tall order to say it's good.
Ernest
I love me
Christmas.
Some Jim Varney.
The least offensive one is the camp.
The one you can eat without gagging the most is camp. I mean, camp. Hello. Camp was like a moment of, hey, maybe this is a funny thing you could do.
I think I agree with you that camp was by far the best. But Goes to Prison and Saves Christmas.
It's
okay.
Bad. No.
Okay,
no.
Save it. Next week, yeah, right? Next week, Brian Dunaway and I will answer the question. Is an Ernest movie better than The Rock?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, geez.
The answer is absolutely not. Abso-freaking-lutely not.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's any chance of that being true, then we've apparently watched the wrong movies.
Yeah. Brian Ibbett will eat his hat, and you've seen his hat. You don't want him to eat that hat.
That loud, obnoxious hat. I will eat it. I will consume it happily.
Yeah. It will all go see a live production of Ibbit and the technicolored poop coat, because that thing is a brightly colored, multicolored
hat.
That's
what's happening afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a brief time, at least on my computer, when if you Googled funny hat guy, you got a picture of Brian.
Of course you did. Mm. Still what? Might. Let's see. Mm. Funny hat guy.
Because, and it's because... of your appearance at the podcast awards a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
When
now it's just all Cam Newton.
it's all Pharrell Williams now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all
Pharrell
Williams.
I don't even show up in the first four rows, five rows, six rows.
You used to, but you don't now.
Yeah.
There's a guy with a KFC bucket on his head that's higher than you. Come on.
Legacy podcast.
Oh, well, the mighty have fallen. Yeah. I still haven't gotten to a picture of me.
I haven't either, but boy, there are some funny hats out there.
There are some funny hats. Yeah. Way funnier than mine. I
they have that big Brian Dunaway, you'll like this. They have the big Norm MacDonald dressed as what's his name with a giant foam
Colonel Sanders
hat. No,
I see that here. Yeah, he's got a wiener dog
Reynolds
in his head.
Yeah,
there.
Burt Reynolds, Turb Ferguson hat. Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah, I see that on there. It's in the second row there.
Pretty good.
Yeah,
oh, I love him. All right, so that's the end of that. We're done, everybody. Next week, Ernest Saves Christmas. In the meantime, if you'd like to get to the website, filmsack.com, and again, all of those. People out there who I know you're out there who love The Rock and think everyone else is nuts about the order that we've talked about today. Come on in and let us know. Filmsack.com. Voicemails 801-471-0462 and emails come to us at filmsack@gmail.com. We are on Twitter @FilmSack. And if you're out there doing it, leave us reviews wherever you get your podcast because that helps us a lot.
No, don't.
Yeah, do.
If you're out there doing it.
No, do it. If you're doing it right now, if you're doing it.
Do it and get angry about your phone ringing.
Yeah, if you're doing it and you hate this,
this isn't happening,
then you can get us what we need. All right, that's gonna do it for us. For me, for Randy, no, for Brian, and for Randy. Get the order right. We'll see you next time.
We'll Hummel out.
Oh, Hummel out. That's perfect. This is done.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Zeus's butthole!